D-Box Radio. This is the construction version of the Many Shades of Green. While we like construction to be LEED certified, today in the studio we have interesting things happening. So, I'm Maxine Margot Rubin, and this is the Many Shades of Green building version. Our program that explores...
We're constructing a great show for you today.
Program that explores environmental and social issues that reflect the greening of our communities. There are many variations or shades of environmental consciousness which affect what actions we take to protect the planet. Everyone has a shade of green that connects them to the natural earth. Our guest this week on the Many Shades of Green is Sharon Abreu, vocalist, activist, and educator, who is the executive director of Earthlings, an organization that uses music and multimedia entertainment as tools to educate people about the environment. So welcome to the Many Shades of Green Builder Edition. How are you?
Just great, thank you.
Come a long way, huh? Took a long trip from where?
Well, I live on Orcas Island in the state of Washington. It's the most northwest tip of the United States, aside from Alaska, I mean, the continental United States. And it's a remarkably beautiful place and a little bit inconvenient.
Now, is the name of the island take it from orca? I mean, a lot of orcas, whales out there? Or what's the backstory on orca, just quickly?
Yeah, I guess it is. You know, I'm not sure exactly. I know that there was Spanish influence out there. By the way, I'm sorry, I have my drill today, and I just can't stop using it. But
Drilly Terriers.
Drilly, we were singing that before.
Right.
We'll have a little round of
very
later.
Interesting show today, right, trust me, ladies and
gentlemen. Okay, so Orcas Island. Well, they're in the San Juan Islands. You know, you can tell there's Spanish influence because they're called the San Juan Islands. There's Lopez Island, there's Orcas Island, which is spelled like the whale, O-R-C-A-S,
right.
Orcas, but we pronounce it Orcas, which of course confuses everybody. So all of our names have to be entirely confusing and require an explanation. So that's just where we are. But yeah,
including
it is like just
Brooklyn.
Like the whale.
Mm-hmm. The whale.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
the whale.
And
so,
we love our orcas, and they are endangered, and there is a lot of work being done to keep that species from going extinct.
Yeah, there's a lot of species on that list, which we have to work to get off that list. So getting the orcas off, another thing we need to be doing. So why so green? Why did you become an eco-activist? What brought you to this point?
Well, you know, I think everybody has their story, and I'm always very interested in those stories. My particular story, I think it started when I was a kid, and I was teased in school, and I just felt I had this sense of injustice. I just had a low tolerance for what I felt was injustice, you know? And
in school, I mean,
just in the way people were treated, in the way I was treated, and also in the way I saw other people being treated.
Right.
You know,
that was pretty amazing for a young kid, what, like grade school age and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, like
wow.
Sixth grade, seventh grade.
Oh, the middle school years; those are the wonder years. Yeah,
kind of started in fourth and ended in eighth.
Wow.
And you know, the old advice: ignore them and they'll stop. And yeah, they'll stop after a few years. You know. So I have a song about that, but I'm not singing that today.
And you sang Pete Seeger tunes at a young age?
Well, you know, yes. When I was at the age of six, and I was in summer camp, and my counselor had a folk guitar, and she taught us If I Had a Hammer. And for some reason, that song just got into me. I didn't understand what it was about when mm-hmm. I was six, but it just stayed with me. And I just sang it, you know, year after year after year. And it wasn't until 1992, and I went to this cute little pumpkin festival on the Christopher Street Pier in Greenwich Village.
Ooh.
And, you know, I had seen this little kind of handmade sign for this pumpkin festival, and a friend of mine, we went down there, and it was this great festival. You know, they had great music, and you know, I play fiddle, and there was this great, you know, kind of acoustic fiddle band playing, and they had really interesting exhibits, environmental exhibits,
okay.
And lots of pumpkins. And it turned out that was the Clearwater pumpkin sale, the Hudson River Sloop Clearwater pumpkin sale.
Right.
They had I knew about Pete Seeger.
Right.
But somehow this had missed me. I did not know about the group. Even growing up in New York, which is really weird.
Yeah, Clearwater is a friend of the program, and we Yeah. We were there at the festival this past year. Mm-hmm. It's pretty awesome. So then you had a connection with music at that point. And you then established something called Earthlings.
Well, that came later. The first thing I did was I joined Clearwater because they had this half-price membership, and I signed up, and I got invited down to a meeting down on Barclay Street, and I went down to this meeting of New York City Friends of Clearwater and started learning about my drinking water. You know, where does that come from, you know? And learning about the Hudson River, which was, I was living on West 14th Street at that time. Right. So, you know, it's only a few blocks away. So I was like, wow, I'm actually learning about these things that are a part of my life, you know? So I started getting more and more into learning about how the environmental things affect people and how, you know, environmental things become political things and how the politics affects the environment and how everything is connected. And I had lots of these big aha moments.
Right.
And then I started educating myself about climate change in 1999 because I was hearing a lot more about it. And I thought, well, as an environmental educator, I should know what this is about. Is this a real thing or what?
Yeah, a lot of people think it's not a real thing. Try to convince them that it's a real thing is sometimes like drilling into your head, you know. Yeah. But it's amazing that there are still people currently, you know, that have the idea that, hey, this is what happens. You know, this is the way the earth is, and the people on it are not really doing anything to contribute to the problem.
The thing that really, I think, that really gets me about that is those opinions are based on ignorance. And that is keeping us from doing what needs to be done to actually save human life on this planet. And I just, it boggles my mind that we do not have the sense, that our political leaders do not have the sense to say, we cannot afford to screw around with this. And we've been screwing around with it for a long time.
Right.
And the effects of it are already being felt, whether you want to say it or not. You know, I mean, I live by the precautionary principle. You know, I mean, I'm not an alarmist. But when I took myself to the American Museum of Natural History Center for Biodiversity in 1999, I went to a two-day symposium on global warming. And it blew my mind. And, you know, there was no way that this wasn't really happening, you know. And so I said, okay, you know, after I got over the initial, oh, my God, this is horrifying.
OMG okay, in 1999. You know. Woo. Amazing. The OMG moments are quite out there when you think about it. And I guess well, you got one of those OMG
moments. Yeah, and people
right
had
there.
It before I did. You know, people had it more than a decade before I did. And the history of climate science goes back to around, I think, 1800.
It's called geology as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
That's when I got my first come up, and that was a geology course at Brooklyn College.
Yep.
That did it for me. But so
when you say, well, what can I do? You know, what can we do?
Right.
And then you start trying to educate and bring people in and influence politicians and change policies and get things more energy efficient, which is saves money and it makes a healthier planet anyway.
Correct.
And it's been unbelievably hard, and there's a lot of influence on fossil fuel industry has on the government, and it's been really, really slow and difficult.
So then what did you do to get the word out?
Well,
you started something,
well,
and you used music as a conduit as well. You thought that was an important way to get the message out.
Yeah, because my first love is doing music. I mean, if we weren't having environmental crises, I would just be singing Mozart and, you know, old folk songs and Broadway music. I mean, I'd just be singing music because I just love it and it's fun.
Right.
And I learned how to use my voice as a musical instrument, and that's what I love to do.
Right.
You know? Well, when I joined Clearwater, I started going to all these things, and I would see Pete Seeger at these events. And after seeing Pete Seeger at several things, I was playing down at the Water Festival, New York City Water Festival at Battery Park, and Pete was down there, and he says to me, oh, it's nice to see you and hear you again. And I was pretty stunned.
That he remembered?
Yeah.
Wow.
And
he was quite
so
a guy.
He would occasionally ask me to do a benefit house concert or a benefit or a school concert, you know, for public school kids, and it was just the best experience. I learned so much from him because he just, I think one of the reasons he was so popular, and I think there's a number of reasons, but one reason was because he was so approachable. He was the kind of person that would say, was always trying to deflect the attention off himself. No, no, it's not about me. It's about you. It's about you. You do it. You have the power.
Right.
You know?
You have the power.
Yeah.
And we do have the power.
Yeah.
We have to use it.
And so watching him just have great respect for the whole human race and talk to 1,000 people like they were two or three people sitting in his living room and getting everybody singing together and really resonating, harmonizing together.
Okay. Well, at this point, you know, you did Earthlings. You've done a lot of different things.
Right.
And we wanted to do, you know, some music since you are a musician, get the message out, and music is the message. So what song would you like to do first off?
Okay, first off, I would like to do this song called The Food Chain Song. This actually preceded Earthlings, which my partner Mike Hurwicz and I started in 2002. And we actually created a show in 1998 called Turn the World Upside Down. And this song is about fish and you know, water and the food web or food chain.
So we are going to give her the guitar, since it's not on video. So I'm going to give her the guitar.
They say I'm only fish food. Ha! Can you believe that? But if they only knew, I'd end up inside of you. It's a hard knock life when you are plankton. You're not gonna live very long, 'cause pretty soon you're gonna get eaten to make the little fishes big and strong. It's a hard knock life when you are plankton. You're not gonna live very long, 'cause pretty soon you're gonna get eaten to make the little fishes big and strong. 'Cause it's the food chain. Doesn't see it coming, but it's really not a big surprise, 'cause it's the food chain.
Taking a break. Very, very quickly, we're going to do a break, and we're here with Sharon Abreu. And tweet us your thoughts at TM Shades of Green to get in on their conversation, and we will be back after a quick break. And we're back with Sharon Abreu, eco-activist, educator, founder of Earthlings. And Earthlings is spelled how, just to get it out there. Because you think it's E-A-R, but it's really not. What is it?
Yeah, no, it's a little weird, but so are we. It's spelled I-R-T-H-L-I-N-G-Z.
Okay, so now you know.
You can find that online at earthlings.org.
Okay, earthlings.org. We'll have all that stuff on the website right after. So you are working, you like to work with youth. You've worked with youth in the past. You've put on shows. You've really done amazing things. And now you're working on a project called Youth Eco Arts Project. Can you tell me what that is about quickly?
Yes, well, Youth Eco Arts Action, or YAY, is a project we developed to work with kids locally. We have an astonishing number of nonprofit organizations in a small area in the San Juan Islands. And we have lots of good friends who, you know, we interface with them, some of them, in various ways. You know, we try to all support each other as much as we can. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great stuff going on.
Right.
And there's one organization that's called QIAT, which is kind of the mother organization for some specific projects, one of which is called the Indian Island Marine Health Observatory. Indian Island is a little island just off of Orcas Island, and it's a nature preserve now, and there's a lot of research being done by QIAT to see, really monitor all of the marine life just around the island and all of the flora and fauna on the island. And so we have done some little bits of things with the director, Russell Barsh.
Okay.
Who incidentally is from New York. He's from Queens.
Shout out to Queens, to Russell Barsh.
He lives on Lopez Island now.
Orca Island, Indian Island. We've got lots of islands out there.
Yeah. Well, we're talking to Russell about doing a joint project with environmental education and arts. Okay. So we developed Youth Eco Arts Action Project. And so we go into a fifth grade class with about 22 students. And Russell works with them on the science. And we're focusing in on a particular problem we are having in this area with stormwater runoff.
Okay.
So he's teaching the kids science, and they're doing experiments on to identify what is the main source of the problem in the runoff, and how could we mitigate that.
Okay.
So, and then we're going in and working with the kids on doing some creative writing and songwriting, you know, writing some skits and creating characters, and we're going to put on a show probably in March. Looks like it's going to be in March.
That's a great way to connect kids with science. You know, using the arts as a conduit is something that's easy to do and is workable. And kids get so much news that's horrid these days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to, like, not, you know, you try to shield them, but you can only shield them so much. And arts and music, you know, is really important to kids now. I mean, aside from the sports and stuff, which is important, it makes sure their bodies are in good shape too. But I think the Eco Walk Project is a great idea. Now, you mentioned islands and flora and fauna and things, and I know that there's many issues involving big oil and coal in the Pacific Northwest now.
So I just want to apologize. I have a tooth that needed a filling, and I didn't have time to do it, so I brought my dentist here. I hope that's okay.
Me too. I'm shouting out to my dentist. Hey, dentist, Mr. Sachs, Dr. J. I need a tooth pulled or something like that. But anyway, so we're back to oil. And, you know, when you have oil, there's usually drilling.
No! Oh my gosh!
That was really not punny. But anyway, seriously now, we have problems out in the Pacific Northwest, and there's a lot of things being transported in the waters there, and a lot of the waters are difficult to navigate, and they're bringing in stuff from Canada, from the tar sands, and so how are you guys, you know, working to get that stopped if you can, or
you know,
whatever.
It's so interesting because I moved out to Orcas Island in 2001, and the vast majority of our electricity comes from hydropower. You know, roll on Columbia. It's that hydropower.
Right.
So we have virtually no coal in our energy mix. Not very much oil. I think it's at least 87% hydro, and so coal has not been a problem for us. Oil is probably our biggest problem because it's, you know, transportation. That's our biggest challenge. However, recently things have really kind of gone crazy with the fossil fuel industry in the Pacific Northwest because they want to use the ports. They want to either build new ports or use existing ports and retrofit them so that they can transport Bakken shale, Bakken crude, and Alberta tar sands oil and coal to China. know, and perhaps other countries in Asia. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, we've become this targeted area for this huge amount of fossil fuel transport and export. And so there's a tremendous amount of pushback. Mm-hmm. Very recently, a new alliance actually over the summer was formed called the Natsumat Alliance. And it's very exciting for me, actually, because it's actually creating healing experiences between the tribes, the Coast Salish tribes that live in this whole area along this part of the Puget Sound that's called the Salish Sea.
The Salish Sea.
Mm-hmm.
Is that's where they're putting these big tankers?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of narrow streets there that are already treacherous, and putting a lot more tankers through there of any kind, let alone single-hulled, not very stable tankers, it's just a disaster waiting to happen. It's a huge environmental catastrophe just waiting to happen. And we really would like to prevent that, you know? So there's this huge alliance now of tribes, environmental groups, faith organizations, community groups, and citizens that have joined together both in the U.S. and in Canada. And we had this fabulous ceremony. It was the day before the big climate march in New York.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Climate Change Knows No Borders rally at the Peace Arch.
You know,
right at the Peace Arch at the border of Washington State and British Columbia. And we had Americans standing kind of on the Canadian side of the park, the Peace Arch Park,
right.
And the Canadians standing on the American side. And we were face-to-face with each other, pledging our support to each other. This was so... I get goosebumps every time I think about how moving it was and
peaceful,
powerful it was.
Moving.
Totally. Yeah, it's like we have each other's backs, because what we're told in Washington State is, well, if you don't take advantage of this coal coming through or this oil coming through, it's just going to go to Canada and it's going to go out from their ports. And the Canadians are like, I don't think so. Mm. So, you know, we're really working together. And it's, if, you know, something really beautiful can come out of something really horrible, that's what's happening. And, oh, I have a song about this, by the way.
Okay.
So we're in pushing back against all of this crazy oil export stuff. I would like to do my song appropriately named Goodbye Oil. Government and oil were the best of friends all through their old school days. Both members of the old boys club refining the American way. After the elections, the vows were taken, and all of those who paid and toiled had to be paid back for their hard work, and the debt was to be paid in oil. Oil? Don't say oil. Not oil. With combustion engines and housing heat and lights in every building and street. Planes to fly, cars and trucks to drive, and faster paces than you could meet. Well, 100 years of burning oil wreaked havoc with the air, land, and sea. The droughts and floods and changing climates made it so we finally had to see that oil had to go. Watch the sea level rise. Oil, leave you.
fall from the sky. Oil, goodbye, oil.
So, Sharon, thank you so much for being here. There's so much to talk about. We're gonna have to do more later in the year and get updates and information. Where can people get info about what you're doing?
Okay, well, you can go visit the Earthlings website at IRTHLINGZ.org, and you can find information about all the other stuff, Penguins Great. On Thin Ice, Climate Monologues, on that website.
Great, great. So thank you so much again. So we've been talking with Sharon Abreu, vocalist, activist, and educator, who is the executive director of Earthlings.org, an organization that uses music and multimedia entertainment as tools to educate people about the environment. Music is the message, and Sharon is following in the path of Pete Seeger's legacy by bringing social and environmental issues to the forefront via music, education, art, and activism. So thanks for joining us for The Many Shades of Green, our program about environmental sustainability, culture, the arts, and community. Listen to the show on your laptop, tablet, desktop, or smartphone. Visit us on Facebook, send us a tweet at TM Shades of Green, and subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. A big thank you to Ebba Carmichael, my co-producer, Brian Horowitz, my co-producer today, and my sound engineer, and Michael Kohlberg, my research assistant, for all their help in getting the show out each week. I'm Maxine Margot Rubin, reminding you to pick a shade of green and raise your eco-consciousness, and we will see you again next time.
There's a beacon of light that's shining from a place where music plays. Up north of New York City, where the river flows both ways. There's a voice that keeps on giving, less loud but just as strong as years ago. It's still aglow like a newborn peaceful song. And it's up to us to keep on hammering its tune till justice rings through everything and peace will be here soon. Oh, sing it for Pete's sake. Yes, yeah, sing it for your own. For everyone, so much at stake. You know you're not alone. Sing out so that hearts awake. Sing for every living thing. Sing it clear so there's no mistake. For Pete's sake, sing. You can march out in the streets now. Hoist up the sail. You can strike out on the picket line, knowing love never fails. Let the music be the wind now that keeps your boat afloat. Carrying on, hope is never gone, though chances seem remote. Oh, sing it for Pete's sake. Yeah, sing it.
Listening to BeBoxRadio.com.